This is Jim Inkster. Today on the show, we'll visit with Jim Brown, longtime Louisiana Politico, former state senator, former secretary of state, and he was insurance commissioner for three terms as well. We'll talk with Jim Brown about what's going on in our state and elsewhere on various fronts, including Alabama's third BCS title in 4 years under Nick Lou Saban. Also, Edwin Edwards, the man whose book was published by Jim Brown, is ramping up for a reality show with his beautiful wife called The Governor's Wife, and reportedly they are expecting a child. We'll talk with Jim Brown about that. And also, Jim Brown, one of the last of the lions from the Democratic Party in Louisiana. Where is the Democratic Party going in our state as we look ahead to this year and beyond? First, the news on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Our numbers are 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. You may reach us via email at inkstershow@wrkf.org. Kevin Gallagher is producing, and our guest in studio, Jim Brown, former Louisiana insurance commissioner, secretary of state, and he also was a state senator, spent much of his early years in the lovely town of Faraday, which has produced so many Louisiana luminaries, not only in politics, but in music and in other endeavors. Good morning to you, Jim Brown.
Good morning. Glad to be here with you, Jim.
And Jim Brown was a world-class athlete in his day. Actually was on a world record relay team with Bullet Bob Hayes back in the day. And I know he follows football closely. And Nick Lou Saban is savoring his third national title in 4 years and his fourth BCS title in his last 8 years as a college coach. He's something else, isn't he?
He was an unbelievable victory last night. And I've been a Saban watcher for a long time. Look, he did a great job when he's here at LSU, and I wish him well. But, you know, he has this process. He is consumed by his football, and that's his key word. You follow the process. And I might share one little story with you about how intense this man is. A good friend of mine had dinner with him a few years back when he was here at LSU. And it was Saturday night, about 10 o'clock at night. And the wives were there. It was a social gathering, if Nick Saban ever does any social gatherings. So his cell phone rings, and he excuses himself and leaves the table for about 25 minutes. And after the dinner, my friend said, "Coach, was there a problem? You took a long phone call there." He said, "Well, it was one of my recruits." He says, "One of your recruits at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night?" He says, "Yeah, I give all my cell phone number to all my recruits. I say, if you've got a problem, if something you want to talk about, call me anytime, day or night." Now, how many football coaches would give their private cell phone number to some kid that's not even on the team? Mm-hmm. This is a recruit. That just shows you the intensity of this guy in terms of covering every single base. So you got to hand it to him, whether they like him here in Baton Rouge or not, because he left. He's certainly the best football coach in America.
Last night, Alabama winning over Notre Dame, 42-14, winning the BCS championship, and that's, what, the seventh in a row for the Southeastern Conference, and LSU has one of those in 2007, Les Miles' third year. But Nick Saban, in his fourth year at LSU, won the BCS title in 2003. The date was January 4, 2004, in the Superdome, 21-14 over Oklahoma. And before Saban's arrival, LSU had had 8 losing seasons in 11 years. And Saban came here as a 48-year-old journeyman who had 41 career victories as a head coach.
That's it, huh?
And it was a game-changing job for him, and he was a game-changer for LSU. You never know. Here's a guy 48 years old. They gave him a big contract, but really his record didn't warrant that kind of a deal, and yet he produced.
He did an amazing job, and like I say, on the other hand, look at how close. It was a matter of, what, 45 seconds, and LSU would have beaten Alabama this year and beat them last year. And so it's not like we're just, you know, praying that one day we'll get up to that level of Nick Saban. Miles, I second guess him like so many of your listeners do. But LSU's had a heck of a string and going to have a heck of a team next year. So football is a matter of seconds. We saw that. Maybe next year it'll swing our way.
Well, Nick Saban's a tough act to follow. And Les Miles has, of course, had to endure living in that shadow. Kind of like what Charlie McClendon did when he succeeded Paul Dietzel as head coach here. And Saban, unlike Dietzel, is he's in the same division. So they see each other every year. And next year, Miles has the unfortunate task of having to go to Tuscaloosa and face Nick Saban and Cruz.
That's right. So, but you know the game, everybody. You know, it's kind of interesting. After this Texas A&M quarterback, Johnny Football, Johnny Mizell, the young kid has got so much excitement around town here in Baton Rouge. That right now is the topic of conversation when Texas A&M comes to LSU next year.
That's
so
right.
Always lots of things to keep us keep us focused and keep us interesting. And I think LSU is still going to be hanging in there. We're still on that same level.
Well, Johnny Football comes to Tiger Stadium on November 23rd, one day after the 50th anniversary of the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. And Johnny Manziel, he got 229 yards rushing. In addition to 284 yards passing against Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl. He's something else.
Really is. I'm anxious to see him in person here in Tiger Stadium.
But he, too, is in the same division as LSU and Les Miles. So Miles, over the next few years, has an ample chore dealing with Alabama and Texas A&M. And the other programs in the division are not slouches either. Arkansas with a new coach. Ole Miss was resurgent this year, and Mississippi State has done very well as far as historical comparisons with their coach, Dan Mullen. So it's going to be a tough time for Les Miles, but he's got talent, and he's shown great abilities as well. 85 wins and 21 losses, and there are people who are not satisfied with that, Jim.
I think the important thing, though, is it just shows how elite the Southeast Conference is. The fact that you can – there's been some losses. We did lose to Clemson, but the fact remains that weekend out, weekend after weekend after weekend, SEC is the best in the business. So it's great to be a part of that, great to be a part of that.
Well, one thing about LSU football, it unites people from all political stripes. Republicans, Democrats, independents, most everyone in the state roots for LSU. In previous years, we had governors who were actively involved in the program. John McKithen was practically an assistant coach and recruited with great earnest for football and other sports. This governor, Bobby Jindal, is pretty much hands-off, and I know that in the last home game this year against Ole Miss at that Saturday afternoon tilt at Tiger Stadium, Governor Jindal was attending Mass at St. Aloysius. Now, some would say he doesn't have his priorities in order, but he's not a big football fan.
No, you know, but he doesn't make a big thing out of this, but friends tell me he goes to a lot of the Hornets games down in Ireland. So I don't know how he'll follow LSU basketball, but apparently he's a basketball fan. So, you know, every governor has his own personality, and Jindal is he's an odd fellow to figure out when it comes to his focus, but you got to hand it to him. He's still very popular, and a lot of movement towards the presidency next time in terms of his running. So I never thought he would take this the tack that he's taken, but you got to give the devil his due. He's been very successful, still very popular here in Louisiana.
Do you think he is still very popular?
Well, look, you go back over you go back over every governor we've had with Mike Foster, Kathleen Blanco, Buddy Romer. They never really got it out of the 50s. They were all 55, 56% in terms of their popularity. Jindal has dropped. There's no doubt about that. But the fact remains that considering the fact that he's not been in the state very much and that there are a lot of problems that are yet to be addressed, I'm surprised his popularity is as high as it is.
Do you think he's running for president?
Oh, I think definitely. I think he's been looking towards national office. Now, you know, there's an awful lot of priests in Louisiana would like to be Pope one day, but the fact so that's really a silver ring that's awfully hard to obtain. New York Times had a lengthy story about Jeb Bush yesterday, and looking like his movement that direction. You're going to see a number of major Republicans look at that race. So I think he's interested in it, but being interested in attaining it is wanting to be the Heisman Trophy winner and actually doing it. It's a long, long leap.
Well, there's so much luck involved, and even Bill Clinton, who, of course, has emerged as perhaps the best politician of his generation, he had to have a lot of luck. When he ran in 1992, he had an open field on the Democratic side because George Bush was thought to be unbeatable after the Persian Gulf War, and Clinton, in order to get the nomination, he had to knock off the likes Paul Tsongas and Jerry Brown, who by that time was a retread of sorts. Tom Harkin was in that campaign. It was kind of a B team that was running for the Democratic nomination.
Clinton very astutely formed this Democratic Leadership Council, saying we got to bring the Democratic Party more into the center, something that in Louisiana needs to be thought of a great deal. Real problems here in Louisiana with the Democratic Party. But Clinton had a foundation. He was an idea guy. And I think that's where Jindal's made a mistake. He just let a lot of loose ends go to waste here in Louisiana. I think if he could be more successful here at home, it'd give him a base to run on. I'm not sure that just running on platitudes, as Jindal has done so far, is going to ascend him to that higher level. You mentioned Clinton. Clinton had a real good think tank that had a lot of ideas about the country. So Jindal's got to do more than just run around and make speeches and talk about birth control like he has been in recent weeks.
Well, that was an interesting maneuver, and it's one that was unexpected, that Bobby Jindal would make a proclamation regarding birth control that has generated support from Planned Parenthood and opposition from the Archdiocese of New Orleans. He wants birth control pills to be sold over the counter.
Well, what Jindal's saying is it's kept the government out of it. He's saying don't use government funds to in any way affect the whole contraceptive birth control abortion debate. No government funds. But as far as accessibility for birth control pills, he says it stays within the private sector, so there's nothing wrong with it. So I think he feels like that's consistent in a more conservative philosophy. I think it also is sending a message that he's not a right-wing extremist, that he's moving more in a centralist position in the Republican Party because, when you talk about issues like evolution and a whole list of issues that paint Republicans too far to the right, Jindal's trying to move center a little bit more. And I think you're seeing that with a number of Louisiana officials, quite frankly, David Vitter and others that are saying, look, we can't be painted as too extreme. We've got to come down to the center a little bit more. And I think that'll continue.
Well, I got an email from Stephen Morey, who was on this show yesterday. And he, of course, is the Secretary of Economic Development, may very well be the next president of LSU. And he said he wanted to expound upon remarks made by Governor Romer, who, of course, ran against Jim Brown in 1987 for governor of Louisiana. And I did tell Stephen that I would relay some of his observations to our listeners. He says, I agree with an awful lot of what Governor Romer said on your show, but I thought his comments left the impression that Louisiana's population growth has been very poor over the last few years, and that's just not the case. Governor Romer was right to point out that Louisiana has one of the worst rankings for population growth in the country over the last 40 years, but we've done much better the last 5 years. Over the last 5 years, Louisiana's population growth was 23% faster than the U.S. overall, and our population growth rank over that period of time was right in the middle of the South. Over the last 5 years, our population grew faster than that of Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Arkansas, Kentucky, and Mississippi. Additionally, the U.S. Census recently reported that Louisiana just experienced 5 years in a row of net population in-migration, more people moving in than moving out. Over the last 4 years alone, over 20,000 more people moved into Louisiana from Texas, Mississippi, and other states than moved out of Louisiana during that time. Governor Romer specifically said that the population growth of Alabama and Mississippi have been better than Louisiana. That may be true over the last 40 years, but it is definitely not true over the last 5 years or the last year. That from Stephen Morey, who says last year population growth did slow a bit in our state. It grew, but not as fast because he says it was primarily due to the slowdown in the Haynesville Shale. But Louisiana, as Governor Romer noted, has lost two congressional seats over the last 20 years, and that's because of our population.
Not much so. You mentioned going back to about 87. If you go over the last 20, 25 years, our population has been by far the least growth area in the country. Now, there may be a little spurt here in the last couple of years. Sometimes that's synthetic with a lot of people coming in for short-term work. After hurricanes, you get a lot of attention and people coming on in. But we've had a real problem with overall growth. Now, if people got to have something to come in for, Jim. That's the problem. You got to have the jobs. You got to have the opportunities to come in for.
We'll be back with Jim Brown on WRKF after this 90-second timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Our numbers 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. Inkster's show at WRKF.org works if you'd like to reach us via email. Kevin Gallagher producing and Jim Brown in studio. And over the last few days, there's been a lot of furor over remarks made by Harry Reid, the Senate Majority Leader from Nevada, about Hurricane Katrina paling in comparison to Superstorm Sandy. The latest missive from U.S. Senator David Vitter calling Reid an idiot. Bill Cassidy, the congressman from Baton Rouge, said that Reid's remarks were repugnant. What do you think, Jim Brown?
Well, I think Reid stuck his foot in his mouth. I would not call the majority leader of the Senate an idiot, but that's how David Vitter is. He's a loose cannon himself. So as far as the comments, Reid was way out of line. I think what Reid was saying was, look, this has affected so many people on the East Coast. We're being very slow, and we've got to move. And then he made this offhand comment about how we moved in so quickly with Katrina. One thing I think he was wrong in saying was that that the federal government was within days down here. You know, I've got relatives that live down in Plaquemine Parish, and they're involved in parish government down there. They were making the point to me that with Katrina, the Canadian Mounted Police made it down to Plaquemine Parish before the first federal person made it down there. So we had our problems, too, with a lot of delays after Katrina. Reid stuck his foot in his mouth. He's apologized. And I don't see how it helps to call him an idiot and keep that debate going on. We still need some follow-up help with flood control. We need some follow-up help on a number of federal issues down here. And by calling the majority leader an idiot, I don't see how that helps our business, quite frankly.
U.S. Senator Mary Landrieu has issued a statement regarding Harry Reid's remarks. She says, Leader Reid misspoke, and he has clarified his statement. Senator Reid has been a strong advocate for the Gulf Coast recovery after Hurricanes Katrina and Rita. I'm confident that he will continue to provide extraordinary leadership and support the people of Louisiana and the Gulf Coast moving forward, as well as champion the needs of the people of the East Coast in the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy. So Senator Landrieu coming to the defense of her fellow Democrat.
And by the way, I don't know if a lot of your listeners know it, there is a huge contingency of Louisiana folks. Shaw here, for example, has a lot of workers up in New York City that are there handling. Shaw has the contract to handle the recovery because of what they did after Katrina. So there are thousands of Louisianians working up in New York right now, and I've got my niece's husband's up there working 7 days a week, 12 hours a day to help with that problem up there. So it's interesting that when the crisis comes around, it's Louisiana who's called into action to help those folks up there.
Well, before we get to Senator Landrieu and her endeavors next year and the challenges of the Democratic Party in Louisiana, what about David Vitter voting for the fiscal cliff bailout? He voted for it, and several members of the Republican delegation, all but Rodney Alexander, voted against it in the House, including Bill Cassidy and Charles Bustani and John Fleming and Steve Scalise. What got into Senator Vitter?
It looked like the leader, if you wanted to be on the leadership team, you wanted to be one of the guys, you wanted to get the positions within the party, that you voted for it. Those who had the hopes of being committee chairman, like Rodney Alexander, Vitter, all voted for it. But those who seemed to push more of their philosophy voted against it. I thought it was a bad piece of legislation, quite frankly. You know what that legislation did, Jim, was raise $4 trillion in new spending. I'm sorry, the spending, $4 trillion in new spending. And taxes on all of us. You know, we hear about the rich getting taxes, but there was a 2% raise in terms of Social Security taxes, which means if you're making $50,000 a year, you're going to pay about $1,000 more in taxes. 77% of every American's household got that increase. In Louisiana, that's about $4 billion. So our taxes in Louisiana went up $4 billion. I think it was a terrible bill. I'm surprised Vitter did it. But I think he did it to keep his leadership position, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's talk that he might be eyeing the governor's office in 2015. It would be a free shot for him. When you ran for governor, you had three congressmen running at the same time in Buddy Romer and Bob Livingston and Billy Tozan, and a former congressman in Speedy Long. For these people in Congress in Louisiana, when they run for a statewide office because of the election schedule, they get a free shot. In other words, if Vitter were to run for governor and lose, he could still come back the following year and run for re-election to the Senate.
Well, you know, John Breaux flirted with the idea of leaving the Senate and coming back and running for governor. So there's been an appeal going back to Huey Long to maybe you're in the U.S. Senate, but the appeal is to come on back here and run for governor. Vitter, I think that in his mind, from what people tell me, feels like that there's only so far up the leadership ranks he can go. He's that he can't go, you know, and he's in the minority, maybe a little frustrated up there, and something very appealing about coming on back and being governor of Louisiana. Like you say, it's a free shot. So I think it's more than just idle talk. I think that he's seriously thinking about it, and it'd be a very interesting race if he does. Because you've got, obviously, Jay Darden, John Kennedy, our treasurer, all who've laid out their course to run for governor. I don't know what Vitter does to their mix, but I think he's eyeing it. And I think it's just a question of he's been in Washington a long time. Not much more up the ladder he can succeed. So why not come back and give a shot to be governor of Louisiana? We're going to have a barn burner of a governor's race next time.
Derek asked if a Tulane graduate can be elected governor.
Well,
you are a Tulane graduate.
I'm a Tulane graduate. I tried and I failed.
Dave Treen tried and won, though.
That's right.
That's been
true.
A while, though. But Vitter, who went to Harvard as an undergraduate, got his law degree from Tulane. And I'm trying to think. Jay Darden, of course, is an LSU graduate. He was student body president at LSU. Do people really get down in the weeds that much? Or
John Kennedy.
He went to Vanderbilt and then went off to Oxford and studied, and he has degrees that are outside the state of Louisiana. Vitter did come back home to his home turf at Tulane, not far from where he went to high school at De La Salle, and he's never lost an election. Darden and Kennedy have lost elections.
That's right.
Sometimes you lose something, or you learn something when you lose, though. Mary Landrieu, certainly, when she lost the governor's election, she came back the following year and was elected to the U.S. Senate. Bennett Johnston, same thing. Jim Brown, when you lost in 1987, did you learn something?
I learned a lot. Learned a lot, took a little break and came on back and gave it a second try.
Well, and Jim Brown was elected statewide three more times after that defeat in 1987, and that was a tough race with an all-star cast with Edwin Edwards and Buddy Romer and Bob Livingston and Billy Tozan and Jim Brown all in the same place, same time, vying for the governor's office. And that says something about Louisiana politics. You know, in many parts of the United States, Jim, it's more prestigious in the eyes of the public to be a U.S. senator than it is a governor. But I don't think there's any office in Louisiana that goes beyond the appeal of being governor of our state.
And Romer touched on that in a speech before the press club here recently, where he said that the governorship really is too powerful, that you just don't need to have the governor handpicking the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, all the committee chairmanships, that we really only have two branches of government in Louisiana. And Jindal has accentuated that all the more by seeing that people who don't toe the company line are removed from their committee chairmanship. So I think there's going to be some rethinking about that. Of course, we've been hearing that for years, and nothing's ever been done about it. But it's interesting that Romer and Edwards has said that recently, that maybe he had too much authority. So maybe there's some rethinking about the balance that we ought to have here in the state.
And Mark notes that if Vitter were to win the governor's election, he would have the ultimate plum. He would have the opportunity to appoint his successor to the U.S. Senate.
That's true. That's true.
That has a lot of political power.
Well, then Bobby Jindal could run for president. If he wasn't successful 6 months or so, then he drops out, supports David Vitter for governor, and then he's appointed as U.S. Senator. So we may be stuck with both of them for some time to come.
Well, they could actually just hand the baton one to the other. Vitter becomes governor and Jindal takes Vitter's seat in the
Senate. Right.
It could happen that way.
That's right.
I don't know if it will.
Jindal has said he's not interested in the Landrieu seat, because I think his eyes are on a higher level. But if that failed, he'd still be right there for Vitter's seat in 2016.
And that brings us to Mary Landrieu. She is up for re-election next year, 2014. She's won three races, one razor tight, another relatively close, and the other one against John Kennedy was not an easy one for her either. How does she look for 2014?
Well, the conventional wisdom is she's really in trouble. Louisiana being such a red state, that she's the only major Democrat that's still on the state scene, she's going to have a real uphill fight. Now, on the other hand, it's a question of who's there to beat her and who's going to go after the office. If Jindal were running, I think she'd really have a tough fight. It looks like Bill Cassidy, our congressman, is the guy right now that is most talked about in terms of running against her. Landrieu, like I say, should be in trouble, and I think is in some trouble. But she's resilient, and she has an uncanny ability to win some tough elections, so you certainly can't count her out. I noticed some of her activities in the state, some of the appointments she's made. She's appointed some Republicans, or like she hung in there with the U.S. attorney in New Orleans for a long, long time, a Republican. Some of her appointments on the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals have been more conservative, non-Democrats. That's made some Democrats mad, but I think she feels like, look, they got no choice but to stick with her, and therefore she's trying to centralize herself, even show a little bit more of a conservative slant, positioning herself for her reelection. Money's going to have a lot to do with it. This is going to be a very expensive race. If Cassidy can raise $8 to $10 million, that's a lot of money in this economic time. But I think he's going to have a chance of knocking off Mary Landrieu.
Well, I think he'll be able to do that. And, of course, the rules have changed. He didn't spend all the money he had available for his congressional race, which, of course, had token opposition from Rufus Craig and Richard Toragano. And he got about 80% of the votes. He has been popular, but he has gone way right compared to where he was. Here's a man who supported Kathleen Blanco against Bobby Jindal for governor 10 years ago, and now he's one of the most conservative members of Congress.
Right. Well, it's interesting that he stays very conservative, where you've got Jindal and Vitter both moving a little bit more to the center. So Cassidy's got to think all that through in terms of how he positions himself. I see that some of Bobby Jindal's key people have moved over to help Cassidy now. So it looks like there's a major effort to coalesce around Cassidy. But he's got a lot of money to raise, and perhaps that more conservative flavor may not be a plus for him when you balance it all out if Landrieu moves to the center a little bit more.
And, of course, if Bill Cassidy runs for the U.S. Senate, that opens up the congressional district here in Baton Rouge. But the way that has been reconfigured, it now has a minority voting registration of about 20%, and it used to be around 30%. It makes it very difficult for a Democrat to be competitive in that race, not beyond the realm of possibility, but that you've got people like Jim Bernhard out there who could potentially be a candidate for some office, and he has flirted in the past with running for the U.S. Senate. Is there any possibility that his name will surface for
one
of these?
For a congressional race, no.
Maybe
don't see
U.S. Senate?
Well, he sure made a lot of money. I saw that he sold all that Shaw stock recently and got about $50 million still plus a lot in. Bernhard is an interesting guy, huge success, a great asset to this community. Mm-hmm. I just think he likes all the attention and likes the talk. But as far as – I think he'd love to run and win, but I'm not sure he'd like the job on a day-in, day-out basis, quite frankly.
It's kind of curious that he is arguably one of the two or three most successful business people in our state.
No doubt.
And he has this flirtation with going to the public sector, where, of course, you know, the rules are much different. And then you've got Governor Jindal and Senator Vitter, who have spent their entire careers as public servants, and they are – over and over in favor of the private sector taking over public service activities. How do you explain that?
You got both ends of the spectrum trying to find a place to meet. Well, they're being consistent in a Republican philosophy in terms of what they're doing, quite frankly. You can make also, Shaw has been very, very successful of being that focus. The cleanup they did after the hurricanes we've had here, after the BP spill. So Shaw has been a major player in doing what Jindal and Vitter are both espousing. And Bernhard has profited from that, and the company's been very successful and a huge plus for us here in Baton Rouge. But I just think that when all is said and done, Jim Bernhard's going to look at the private sector and say, hey, this is where I'd rather stay.
Mm-hmm. How long have you lived in Baton Rouge, Jim?
Since 1979, when I was elected Secretary of State. That's when I stayed in Faraday for about 3 years and kind of commuted on weekends. But it became difficult to do. And once my kids got moved on up the line and got into college, I came on down to Baton Rouge.
That's 34 years.
That's right.
We hadn't planned on talking about this, but we have a couple of people who've asked your response regarding the story that's emanating today. East Baton Rouge Metro Councilman Chandler Loop, the Mayor Pro Tem, and others are calling for a curfew in light of the incident at the Mall of Louisiana the other night, in which about 200 kids got in a fight. Is that overkill, or is that something?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that, look, in this day and age with the delinquency problems we have, I just don't see, with the exceptions of kids who are working, and I know we're in a changing society where we're not an 8-to-5 world. I understand that. But when you've got a child 16 years old and under, they got no business being on the streets at midnight, 11 o'clock midnight. They just got no business being out there during the week and on
weekends. This was like 6:30 in the evening, though, when this fight broke out, I think. It was early in the evening. But so what would a curfew do to address what happened?
I believe there was it's just amazing. A lot of us don't understand how quickly the information spreads through texting, through Twitter. Mm-hmm. I understand there was some talk of a flash mob out there where there was going to be a big, huge dance and singing operation. And so hundreds of kids came to the mall just to have a good time. Then the fight broke out and it just got out of hand. So, no, the curfew wouldn't help that. But quite frankly, I'm all for a curfew for young people.
Well, right now, juveniles are prohibited from being out from 11 to 5 most days of the week, except for Friday and Saturday when it's 1 a.m. to 5 a.m., and you're saying 1 a.m. is a little late in the game for somebody who's 16 years old.
15, 16 years old. Without some – now, I know enforcement is very tough. How do you enforce something like that? And so you can't have the police out just running around stopping kids to check how old they are. But just as a philosophy, I just don't see what good comes. What's the old saying? Nothing good happens after midnight. So maybe I'm the old school on that.
Unless you're Eric Clapton. After midnight.
Right. Right.
Well, those arrested from this brawl last Saturday were all under 15 years old. So we'll see what happens. But this has caught the attention of the people. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Jim Brown, who's playing hurt today, is with us, and we're pleased that he has stayed with us despite not being at full speed. But Jim Brown at 3/4 speed is faster than most of the rest of us.
A little weak voice here, but I'm hanging in there.
And you were really fast in your day. 4:40, what was your best time?
I was 400 meters. I ran 45.6 was, I think, the best I ever ran. I was pretty swift about 8 belt notches ago in the waist, Jim. And so, I had the great honor of being on the U.S. track team and handing off to Bullet Bob Hayes, who was the fastest man in the world at the time. And Hayes is an interesting guy. He got busted for possession of drugs over in Dallas just after he left the Cowboys, moved to Tampa, Florida, and ran a drug rehabilitation program the whole rest of his life. And really was a very committed Christian. I talked to him maybe 4 months before he passed away. We stayed in touch over the years. And so he really turned his life around and tried to make something of it. Really ended up being quite a great guy over there.
Yeah. Died early, though. And what a brilliant receiver he was with the Dallas Cowboys after his fabulous track career. Number 22, Bullet Bob Hayes.
That's right. What a treat to I was really the hurdler on the American team, but they needed the fourth guy for the relay. So they said, okay, Brown, how about you run the relay? Well, sure, I was honored to. They said, now you're going to hand off to Hayes. My goodness gracious, the guy's the fastest man in the world. If I slow down a bit, he's just going to leave me, you know. So I was always very intimidated.
This was the third leg?
No, he didn't run anchor. Paul Warfield ran anchor.
Really? Another great
runner
football
For the Philadelphia Eagles, I think.
Cleveland.
So
number 42,
that's
Ohio
right.
State.
That's right. So we had Warfield, and we had
Bob Hayes.
Bob Hayes. I ran the lead off, handed off to Hayes. And then Ralph Boston, who held the world's record in the broad jump at the time, he ran the third leg for us.
You're right.
So he's a Mississippi boy, by the way. So it was a great thrill for me to
be
on
that. Do you have any photos of that?
What?
Do you have any photographs of that?
I do. I've got a few old photographs stuck back.
Were you with those three guys?
I know I've got one with Hayes. I've got to dig those out and see. It'd be a great new book.
Well, that's a part of Jim Brown's life that many people don't know. And, of course, you share your name with the greatest running back of all time in the history of the National Football League.
And a heck of a singer, too. You know, James Brown probably had some horse days like this.
But you feel good.
Very much so.
Jim Brown. Now, you were not born in Faraday, Louisiana, but you spent a lot of time there, and that's the town that hatched your political career and is also the home turf of Jimmy Swaggart and Jerry Lee Lewis and Mickey Gilley.
Mickey Gilley, the country singer of the year. I was at one point in time did legal work for all three of those fellas. So what a treat Jimmy Swaggart's father wanted me to incorporate Swaggart's church there in Baton Rouge. And so then he decided to come, in Faraday. Then he decided to come to Baton Rouge, and he'd ask me, would I help? Well, you know, he's not going to amount to much. I kind of pushed it off on a lawyer friend down here. Swaggart's probably had more legal fees paid than anybody else in this whole state. So
yeah, that would be a full-time job.
That's right.
Working
very
for
much
Brother Swaggart. Now, Swaggart and Jerry Lee, born in 1935, Mickey Gilley in 1936, but they were born same year as Elvis Aaron Presley, who was born on this date, January 8th, 1935.
His birthday. Happy birthday to Elvis.
78 years old for Elvis. And Kevin, we might listen to a little Elvis Presley before we part company with Jim Brown today. But anybody growing up in the South, particularly at your time, had to be influenced, I think, in some way by Elvis Presley.
No doubt about it. But actually, I was really, you know, at the time, in the late 50s, Jerry Lee Lewis was on the same level as Elvis Presley. I remember dancing with my high school sweetheart, a whole lot of shaking going on, and he was just as big as Presley. And then when he married that 13-year-old cousin, his career kind of plummeted, and Presley took off. But at the time, the Louisiana boy was right there with the Mississippi boy in terms of national popularity.
And ultimately, they both ended up in Memphis and didn't live too far from each other. I remember Jerry Lee, once apparently intoxicated, went over to Elvis's house with a gun and had to be stopped before entering Graceland, apparently to exchange pleasantries with the king of rock and roll.
If you go to the Delta Music Museum in Faraday, there is an album you can buy there that has both Elvis and Jerry Lee and Carl Perkins. Remember Carl Perkins, Blue Suede Shoes, all on the same album.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Jim Brown.
I can't hear.
Dan, you've got it.
Yes. I was wondering if you knew another great Faraday native, Howard K. Smith, who moderated the first TV presidential debate.
I never knew. Well, actually, I talked to Smith. I talked to Smith one time on the telephone. I called him back in maybe the 70s. But you're right. He was from Faraday, as was General Claire Chennault, of the Fighting Tigers fame in World War II. But Smith was born in Faraday and ended up being one of the premier newscasters in the world, a great fella, and I had a marvelous 30-minute conversation with him. he didn't like Congressman Otto Passman, and I was considering running against Passman back in the 70s. And so we talked for about 30 minutes about what a problem Passman was, in his opinion, to our part of the state. So, but a great fella, never met him personally, But I did have a nice telephone conversation with him, but a great Faradayite.
He was born May 12th, 1914 in Faraday, almost 99 years ago, died February 15, 2002, so he had a long life. He lived to be almost 88, and a graduate of Tulane University, 1937. A few years before you arrived.
Right, special guy.
At Tulane.
3 years before I was born.
Yeah, Rhodes Scholar, a brilliant guy, and was host of ABC News, Nightly News, from 69 to 75. So that brings us to your beautiful and talented daughter, Campbell. How is she doing?
She's doing great. She's got two little boys, lives in New York. Her husband, Dan Senor, was Mitt Romney's foreign policy advisor. In fact, I saw him this morning on Morning Joe on MSNBC. But Dan is Campbell, live in New York. She writes a lot of op-ed pieces. She's regularly writes them and appears in the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. And so she's become a writer. She says, "Dad, I love TV, but I was there for 20 years. And it's just a tough gig when you never are able to put your kids to bed or get up in the morning with them." So she's opted to be a writer rather than be on television. But she's doing great and obviously very proud of her huge success in the media.
Frank McMain says that Carl Perkins wrote Blue Suede Shoes.
Yeah, I said that.
I think that's what you said, yeah. So
great song, but they sing a couple of songs together on this album, Perkins, Elvis Presley, and Jerry Lee Lewis, and so that's the point I've been making about that great song.
Now, Jim Brown has gotten into the publishing business, and his most noted book is the one that was written by our friend Leo Honeycutt, the authorized biography of Edwin Edwards, which is still selling well, and now I would think that more people will be focused on the governor, the former governor, who is 85 years old, because he is a star of a reality show.
Yeah, and that's going to help book sales, I think. By the way, the Edwin Edwards book is the largest selling book by a Louisiana author in the history of Louisiana. So we're approaching 100,000 copies, so a huge success. But, you know, a lot of people roll their eyes when they hear Edwin Edwards talk or talk about his young bride, but you got to hand it to the guy. He has this marvelous way of staying in the news, and this reality show starts, I think, in February. They've been taping it, I understand, for about 3 months, and so we'll be able to follow his life and his young bride's wife as they move around Gonzales, Prairieville, wherever they're doing. So I don't know how successful it'll be, but he's made money off of it, I'm told. And his book has been a huge financial success for him. So he's found life after politics and life after prison and found a great deal of success at 85 years old.
Well, his wife, who's 34, was at Broadmoor High School when Edwin was finishing his last term as governor, his fourth term. Jim is smiling. You know, if anybody can pull it off, he can, but 51 years, in addition to the physical differences between people of those ages, he has a life experience that she does not. What do they talk about?
Well, I can tell you this. He's been to a lot of the book signings. I've seen it. And I've been with him on a number of speeches that he's made where I've been on the program. I've never seen him there without her. She is with him at every time he goes. And he tells the story about how in prison that she came to every visiting hour in the last year he was in prison and stayed from the time you could walk in the door till the time they closed. So there's a special bond there because she never leaves his side. It's not like this is just some young thing that he kind of has around there to keep him occupied.
No, I think
she is a very integral part of his life.
Anyone who's seen the two of them can recognize that they're happy with one another, and unconventional relationships are sometimes the best, and this one is one that is not conventional. I think we could agree
with
that.
Whatever works.
Whatever works.
And this seems to be working
for
him.
And in most cases, as we know, marriages don't work. So,
and, you know, he seems to be in good health. I know he walks around his subdivision, lives there in a nice subdivision just south of Gonzales and Pelican Point. And he walks there regularly, and apparently he's in awfully good health. So at 85, you got to hand it to him. He's still got hopefully a number of years to live.
Well, the word is that she is with child, and I think they're going to save this for the reality show. But she, I am told, is expecting a child later this year when Edwin will be 86. And if we do the math, Jim, that means when Edwin Jr. graduates from high school, his dad will be 104, if anybody can pull it off.
And be around at 104. I hope I'm around close to that. But, well, I have not heard that that they are expecting. But if that's what they'd like to do, well, look, more power to them. More power to them.
Well, to get to one of the topics that we promised for discussion, the state of the Democratic Party in Louisiana. You were a Democrat your entire career. You're on record as saying that you're not going to switch parties. You wouldn't switch if you were running again. So what happens to the Democratic Party now with only one statewide elected official in Mary Landrieu? Where does it go from here in our state?
Well, the party has some soul searching to do, and it's got to do a lot of revitalizing. This has any future. On the other hand, isn't that exactly what the Republican Party is going through on the national level? In this last election, the Republican Party lost every demographic area except older white guys. They lost young people, young men, young women, Hispanics, African Americans, women at all ages, so at all age groups. So, and then if you look at this fiasco that's happened in Washington, where they just caved into Obama on the whole budget fiscal crisis.
Is that what they did?
Well, it looks like they did to me. It's hard to believe that you've got people like David Vitter and others that are voting to increase our taxes overwhelmingly, and go ahead and add $4 trillion in spending, and that's supposed to solve our financial crisis? Not $1 that was cut? I mean, I just don't understand that, Jim. So they've got some soul-searching to do themselves. Now, I'm just using that as an example. On the national level, the Republicans, the Democrats have not taken on that soul-searching quite yet. They are not, in my opinion, quite as aggressive in questioning Governor Jindal. They've got some, you know, you've got to raise some dollars to do that kind of thing. And so they've got to revitalize their financial base. If they ask me for some advice, I'd try to bring in some Jim Bernhardts and a cross-section of other business people at all levels, men, women, blacks, white, Hispanics, and put a think tank together that can, number one, raise money and get some fresh ideas out there. They can't be a central left party in a state like Louisiana that's a strong red state. There's no future there. I've not heard the Democratic Party say anything about gun control, for example. We are a gun owner state. We don't want to give up our guns. And as a consequence...
Any guns?
Well, the assault rifles, you know, I just personally... don't know why you need an assault rifle that shoots 50 rounds. But those are issues that at least ought to be discussed by Democrats that right now are not on the table. They just seem to be kind of languishing a little bit. There's a few bright stars in the Democratic Party, a few legislators. But by and large, they've not focused on the direction they want to have. They're not raising money. They're not doing the things you've got to do to revitalize the party. I don't think it's dead, but I think it's got a lot of revitalization to come through.
Well, it's going to be a topic that is fertile for discussion as Senator Landrieu runs for re-election next year. And it is notable that as the state becomes more red, the urban areas, including Baton Rouge, have become blue. Obama, President Obama, received more than 52% of the votes in East Baton Rouge Parish.
And I think Landrieu ought to be capitalizing on that. I think she ought to be really working hard to revitalize the Democratic Party. Look, she's stuck with it, whether she likes it or not. So it's great to raise money for herself and look after her personal campaign. But I think the party apparatus could be a great help to her. But so far, she's not headed in that direction.
Well, as we part company with Jim Brown, let's give a listen, Kevin, to Elvis Aaron Presley, born on this date in Tupelo, Mississippi, 1935. This was a hit that was on the charts when he died, August 16th, 1977.
Babe, you get closer, the lights are going dim, the sound of your breathing has made the mood I'm in. Feel it, feel it, feel it, feel it,
last hit when he was with us. He died almost 36 years ago, Elvis Presley. He's been dead much longer than he was famous, but his impact is certainly everlasting. Today, Kevin, also the birthday of another great singer who is still alive, Shirley Bassey, the Welsh singer, 76 today. So maybe we'll hear a little Shirley Bassey tomorrow. Jim Brown, thank you.
Glad to be here with you, Jim. Always a pleasure.
And we look forward to visiting with you again. Good luck in your publishing endeavors. Leo Honeycutt back with another book that details a character from our area in Jerry Lane. And Jim Brown, of course, continues to opine in various ways about politics near and far.
Can I mention my website at jimbrownusa.com?
There you go, jimbrownusa.com. We'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.